This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Molnar here in just a few minutes. Public Service Commissioner talking data centers, energy, and more. Hey, first, though, you know, I finally thought to do it. Every year now since we first launched this show, Montana Talks, you know, and I've been publishing content on our Montana Talks website as well that you'll also, by the way, you can also read it. If you're in Butte, you can go to the KXTL website. You'll get the content there and along with your other Butte news and headlines too. Same thing, KBUL, Billings, KMMS, Bozeman, et cetera. But I try to do this every year, you know, because we you know, we produce a couple of stories every day, and then I cross-post a whole bunch of other stories as well. And sometimes you never know which stories are going to take off. And then some stories are pretty obvious that they're going to take off and get a lot of your page views. So I wanted to go back and look at the top 10 Montana stories of 2025. You know, as we get towards the end of the year here and heading into New Year's, a lot of people are going to be doing, hey, what were the top stories of 2025? And I wish if I had more time to do it, I would actually look back and say, okay, what were the no joke, the legit top 10 stories of the year? Just straight up the biggest stories of the year and publish that kind of a list. But the easiest thing to do is just say, okay, hey, based off of Montana page views of people here in Montana that were looking at our content and sharing our content, what were the top 10 stories of 2025? And some of the highlights, of course, the continued push to go after the illegal aliens here in the state. Those stories continue to generate a lot of your page views, especially the Trende Aragua connections, you know, this violent Venezuelan prison gang. In fact, number 10 was Trende Aragua-related arrest by Border Patrol in Havre. Number 9, Vice President Vance lands in Butte, motorcade to Dillon. That story got a lot of attention. We had some details there that some other folks didn't have. Number 8. FBI Hispanic gang expert weighs in on Wolf Point and Bozeman arrests. Number 7, Belgrade woman pleads guilty to harboring illegal aliens. Number 6, of course, the tragic loss of our good friend Yellowstone County Commissioner John Ostlin, killed in that plane crash this year. Of course, a lot of folks love John Ostlin, and so that story got a lot of attention. Billings teacher under investigation for celebrating Charlie Kirk's death. That came in at number 5. The Bolo alert for a thief on the run in Montana. That came in at number 4. Number 3 was, hey, we had a lot of warm weather, but then brace for it. Here she comes, the cold weather. So a weather story. Those always generate some big attention. Number 2, remember how there were death threats against some of our friends who were raising questions about that Billings teacher who celebrated the assassination of Charlie Kirk? That story came in at number 2 for the year. And then number 1 was a big update about how they caught a predator who ended up being a federal employee in Montana. So that ended up being the biggest story of the year based off of your page views here in Montana.
Here's a look at your Montana weather for Billings and Bozeman. For today, some patchy fog possible to start. Otherwise, we'll have mostly cloudy skies with high temperatures climbing up into the upper 40s. For tonight, mostly cloudy with lows in the lower 30s for Billings, closer to the middle 30s for Bozeman. And into Wednesday, we'll see a mixture of clouds and sunshine with highs in the low to mid 50s. And that's a look at your Montana weather on Montana Talks. I'm weatherology meteorologist Michael Caro.
Hey, Aaron Flint here with Montana Talks. We have got an incredible guest joining us live on Tuesday's Montana Talks, Art Laffer, the Laffer Curve. I first heard about Art Laffer when I read Rush Limbaugh's book as a junior high school kid in the 1990s. Well, Art Laffer is working to finally reform these absurd property tax systems. So we're going to be talking about how to do away with this stupid property tax system in Montana with Art Laffer coming up Tuesday.
Broadcasting live across the big sky, Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Energy, AI, and data centers. Who pays? This was an article that I posted on our Montana Talks website in early December after a great conversation that we had with State Senator Daniel Zolnikov out of Billings. Really, this is going to be one of the big questions facing the great state of Montana in the year ahead in 2026. Great to be joined by former state senator and public service commissioner Brad Molnar. Brad, great to have you back on the show. Yeah, your thoughts, what decisions await the state of Montana in 2026 when it comes to energy and data centers, all this stuff?
Well, the swirl on that is never-ending. A good chunk of the equation is actually happening outside of Montana, and that's part of the reason I called in is I've been very much in that mix, and people need to know that there are tremendous forces in Louisiana. Very recently, they rate-based a $6 billion data center. So they got to make that decision as a commission, how to do it, how to ring fence it, how to try and protect people, all that sort of thing. The one that I've been working on, including with Louisiana, working with heavily North Dakota, Missouri, Mississippi, and Louisiana, a group called MISO, which Montana Dakota Utilities belongs to. It's a regional transmission generation organization, decided on their own, without even a vote of their members, that they would start a build-out of transmission only, to connect renewable energy in one state to states with renewable mandates and to AI centers, which wants renewables. They'll take wind or solar, it's intermittent, put it in a battery, bring it back out and use it. The part I was in was called 2.1. There's a 1.0 that's already passed. 2.1, I've been involved in at the FERC level, may wind up at federal court. 2.2, 3.0, 4.0, you add them all together, it's $100 billion. 1.0 was $10 billion. That's as much as all farmers got in the way of government subsidies. You know, people get numb to these numbers. They don't mean anything. Well, that's how big it is. And in 2.1, where I am, it's $22 billion. So that affects Montana Dakota utility customers who, and this is critical, receive nothing. They don't get a windmill. They don't get a transmission line. They don't even get an extension cord or a thank you note from the 1.0. They'll have a $200 million rate increase. From 2.1, it's another $400 million rate increase. If we don't stop it, if the efforts I've been working on, if they go all the way up, it's a $2 billion rate increase for which they get nothing other than to say we supported clean energy to supply data centers. So Montana Commission doesn't even get a vote on that other than my efforts to join with the others representing the entire state, the entire commission, to stop that.
Well, and this goes back to the big picture here is because what you're saying is when they're talking about rate basing this, the concern, and this was a quote that Senator Zolnikov shared when he was on the show with us here. He said, those server farms can build up their own energy. Putting the risk on the back of grandma is an unacceptable standard. You know, the Montana Electric Cooperatives Association has been doing a big feature segment on data centers in their Rural Montana magazine, and they pointed out that you know when the Bakken started rocking for oil and gas, those oil and gas companies came in and they helped build the infrastructure to supply the power that they needed for oil and gas. And so in theory, a similar thing could and should be done when it comes to data centers as well, so the grandma's not paying and everybody else isn't paying for the additional electricity, but the companies instead are helping to build that out.
Right. And Brian Bird, who's the CEO of Northwestern, and I Wachhorn so hard on data centers during the rate case, and he was the first testifier. But after about a half hour of me and him just going at it like two cats in a sack, his chief legal called for a recess. You know, he said, you guys are getting nowhere. And I said, that's the cost of finding out information. Your request denied. And we went right back at it. Well, then I tried to make a an amendment into the rate case that kept data centers or, and stuff to say data center, you know, it's like any, because we don't do economics on any individual business. It's those that use more than 50 megawatts of electricity. They tried in the legislature to get the 50 megawatts taken down under House Bill 877, which is actually labeled the Data Center Encouragement Act. And representing the entire commission, I went in and we got that killed. So now we're getting these, if you add them together, 597 megawatts from Puget and Avista, donated the generation in Colstrip 3 and 4, donated to Northwestern. So they went, and which by FERC law, Federal Energy Regulatory Commission law, a regulated utility, that would be Puget and Avista, that transfers a rate-based generation system, that would be Puget 3 and 4, Avista 4, to a regulated utility, that's Northwestern, it remains rate-based. So the PA has control over that.
All right, hold that thought. We're going to break that down a little bit more here. Got to take a quick break, get to the Farm and Ranch Report, and then we'll come back to Brad Molnar, Public Service Commissioner, right after this.
Hey.
This is where Montana Talks Ag with Lane Nordlund.
Leaders of the House Agriculture Committee say Congress may need to step in with at least $10 billion in additional aid for U.S. farmers beyond the $12 billion Farmer Bridge Assistance Program recently announced by the Trump administration. House Ag Committee Chairman Glenn G.T. Thompson of Pennsylvania said the administration's program, while helpful, does not go far enough to support all sectors of agriculture. The current package is largely aimed at row crops such as corn, soybeans, and wheat, with about $1 billion set aside for other commodities. Thompson said industries including dairy, timber, and specialty crops like potatoes may require further assistance to help producers secure credit and remain viable into 2026. He emphasized that any supplemental aid should stabilize farms without replacing market forces. Meanwhile, USDA Undersecretary Richard Fordyce said budget constraints make a second aid package from the agency unlikely, leaving Congress as the primary option for more support. Senate Agriculture Committee leader said they are waiting to see how far the current funds go before committing to a specific amount of additional aid. As for the $12 billion set aside for the Farmer Bridge Assistance Program, the enrollment is currently underway for those commodity crops that are qualifying for it. For more information on it, contact your local Farm Service Agency office. I'm Lane Nordlund.
You're listening to Montana Talks, bringing truth and freedom to Montana. Here's your host, Aaron Flint.
All right, so we've got Public Service Commissioner Brad Molnar with us on the show talking energy, AI, data centers, and more. Going to be a big topic in the new year ahead in 2026. Brad, how would you break it down in kind of, plain English? Because you're so good at diving into the details on, you know, FERC filings, MDU, and all this stuff.
Okay. I've heard that before, and I'm trying my best without leaving out what I think is the important part. So what I'm talking about is they have these low-cost generation from the transfer from Puget and Avista, because it's low-cost because there's no cost for the plants. They're giving the plants to Northwestern. Well, that creates an opportunity for Montanans to have their electricity rates reduced 50 to 60%. So Northwestern goes
if the liberals in Washington and Oregon, if they don't want coal-fired power, well, hey, we'll take it here in Montana, yeah. Right? Because we love our beautiful clean coal in the coal-fired power.
Yeah. Right. But Northwestern went to FERC, the Joint Regulatory Commission, and filed that it would not be rate-based. They wanted it to serve data centers. So that's where I jumped in.
Then also they said that basically that the PSC wouldn't have authority over that Colstrip power because that's not Montana power. That's a separate deal. We got that from Oregon and Washington. Yeah, interesting.
They tried a bill, House Bill 911, in the legislature to allow them to create a wholly owned subsidiary that was not regulated but controlled by Northwestern. I got that killed 11-1 on the Senate side. Zolnikoff voted with me on that one. They created it anyway and filed it in July 11th as a wholly owned subsidiary. They said it's not regulated because we said it's not. Well, the legislature said you can't do that. They said, well, yes, we can. Okay, so that's a matter of law. It'll probably be determined in Montana. It was part of our filing at FERC that they don't have this authority. So the question is, and this goes to Grandma, will those electrons serve Grandma and reduce electricity rates and give us the economic boon across the state on this, or will they serve data centers and Northwestern's investors? That's the question. So to say that it doesn't affect Grandma because she's already served is wrong if we can reduce rates.
Well, because big picture, taking a step back here, too, big picture is like, in theory, you should be able to bring on a new large customer and then allow that to keep rates for your existing customers lower. I mean, that's what the electric cooperatives have done and do what they were able to do with the oil and gas boom in the Bakken, for example. They took on these new customers that were able to keep the costs lower for their existing customers. But that's because the oil and gas guys paid for the infrastructure that needed to be put in place. And then that customer base kept the rates lower. And you could do the same thing in this case, but you need to bring more power online. Like hey, let's get Colstrip 1 and 2 back up and running as well, right?
Well, we've never owned Colstrip 1 and 2. That's always been under the purview of the Washington Public Utility Commission. So if they were to bring those back on, the reason they're free is they said, get rid of it. We don't want to be responsible for coal. So they gave it to Northwestern so they wouldn't be charged taxes and all that while it's sitting there. Now it's very valuable because people are saying that we've gone so far towards renewables. We need high capacity energy. When we say turn it on, we throw the switch, it's on. We don't sit and wait and see what the wind's going to do. So now suddenly they're very valuable. But they're valuable to the people of Montana by FERC law. You're rate-based, and Northwestern says we're not. So I get the commission to jump in. We file the filing is incomplete. It's illegal. We've got problems here. And then two commissioners, our leadership, met with Northwestern, bought their line, and pulled us back out, which made no sense. The filing was done. It's like throwing in the towel. Well, you're waiting to see who the decision is going to. We still don't know the decision. So the politics in this, when you're talking hundreds of millions of dollars, is huge. When you're talking $100 billion on 12 states, Eastern Montana being one of them, it's huge. The president is still pushing, no rules against data centers. The governor goes and gets contracts from Mitsubishi for data centers. If I'm lying, I'm dying. These numbers are phony, but they're real. Montana Public Service Commission controls 877 megawatts. That's it. And that's full pull. That means that the dams are producing at maximum. Well, that's during spring runoff for a couple of months. After that, those numbers go down. That's the base plate, the nameplate of the wind. Well, that's 40% capacity. Those numbers are 60% off.
Well, and so
normally
this kind of
we have 650.
This kind of goes back to some of the questions that are coming in from our listeners on the Montana Talks app as well. I know we've only got a few more minutes here, but But this is a big topic we're going to cover more in 2026 as well. But Cameron and Billings, you know, earlier said, what is the PSC doing to make sure that the addition of these data centers won't raise or pass on the cost of utilities for residents? And then Fred and Billings messaged in. I'm in line with Fred here. As I already kind of mentioned, I just saw the message, though. It would be a great tax base if we had a billion-dollar data center in Billings. You know, Butte wants one, of course. They're working on one right now. Sure would help on our property taxes. Fred says, my question is, why can't they rehab Colstrip 1 and 2 for the energy these data centers need? Let the data center pay for the rehab and future costs and thus not affect mom-and-pop users. So that was just a couple of the messages that have been coming in.
Well, and I tried an amendment. I had three amendments going into on the rate case, which is a whole big thing happening today. You'll probably be reading about it on the paper, to what I call Delta. Every data center had a number, Delta 1, Delta 2, Delta 3. Their cost would not be rate-based over above the 50 megawatts, which is current law, if they grew, and they do. And if you read what Northwestern was, we're going to start out at 50 megawatts, and they'll be at 250, and this guy will be at 1,000. And if they grow over that, they're booted out. If they do it under different corporate names, but they're connected in any way, transmission or whatever, then they have to leave and go get their own electricity. In the meantime, you know, let's use Louisiana, $6 billion AI plant. Okay? There's no reason why they can't build their own Yellowstone generating system and use that to supply them. But now, what happens to the pipelines? Now, they have to be bigger. Somebody has to pay for that. So it's far more complex than that. And what Daniel said was, I think that he said Representative Zolnikoff, that's his wife, and, you know, I really love working with her. She's smart. She's flexible. She'll admit if she's made a mistake. She wants to, if they will build their own generation, well, that's her only option. We're in the market buying a third of what we need every day. We'll give them a lower tax rate. What happens then? Everybody else's tax bills go up. So I asked Brian Birdie, he said the same thing, it'll help lower utility rates. And I said, in what county, in what state has the inclusion of a data center lowered cost or lowered taxes? Well, it kept them from going up. In Georgia, one of the few remaining elected commissions, just like us, they put in data centers. For the first time in 15 years, Democrats won two seats because the costs are horrific. Virginia wants to stop allowing them. Iowa is reviewing their policy. They can't afford it. This is a pie-in-the-sky thing if it is not handled with a joint effort.
Well, and the other big picture thing here, the other big picture thing here, Brad, with about a minute to go before I have to get to another guest, is look, the reason why folks are so sensitive right now, justifiably so, is because we just saw the Green New Deal agenda shoved down our throats, and electricity inflation all across the country under the Joe Biden years went up 30%, and yet they weren't investing in bringing power generation online.
Well, that's because they were shutting down coal, shutting down natural gas, because that's just a never-ending legal battle that you may or may not win after 5 years and still have to supply it. So they built wind and they built solar. No legal hassle, and you get a subsidy. Well, we are now to the point where, and we use MISO, which is like 15 states, which is so big on renewables that they have to build transmission lines into other regional transmission organizations to bring in the power while they're still shutting it down and trying to get the people of eastern Montana to kick in $400 million a year.
Especially when the weather gets really bad and then they're desperate for power.
Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right. right. Hey, we got another great guest joining us here live this morning on this Tuesday before Christmas on Montana Talks, our good friend Sarah Swanson, who is the commissioner for the Montana Department of Labor and Industry. Sarah, Merry Christmas to you, and it sounds like you've got a beautiful view. You're back home in Fort Peck overlooking the lake right now as we speak, so it's already a Merry Christmas for you.
It is, Aaron. It is so nice to be back in eastern Montana.
Did you get some Eugene's pizza yet, or
I have not right? yet. I've only been home about 24 hours, but it is on the list.
It's on the list, that's for sure. Well, this was really cool news. Last week, I actually reached out to the governor's office and said, hey, who would be best to talk to about this? Because when I first saw this news that the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office was going to be put, or the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office was going to be putting a new office right here in Montana. Apparently, it's the first of its kind in the Western United States. I was like, this sounds to me like a very big deal because of all of the manufacturing industry we've got in Montana, because of high tech that we've got in Montana, especially, of course, in the Bozeman area. Having a patent and trademark office could be really huge. But what's your take? Because I know you worked very closely on this.
We have been working on this for some time, Aaron. And at the end of the day, the launch of a community engagement office, the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office on campus at MSU in Bozeman, absolutely underscores the promise of the governor's 406 jobs executive order initiative that we launched back in August. If we are truly going to scale the advanced manufacturing and computing sector, one of our six high-demand sectors under that executive order, additional support for intellectual property and patent examining services was mission critical. And we are so thrilled that we were able to move government at the seat of business and get this put together in just a few short months.
Well, I was also thinking of a mutual friend of ours, a great guy, Chris Shipp. A lot of folks know him here across Montana. In President Trump's first term, I think he was chief of staff for the U.S. Commerce Department, and I know he's played a key role in the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office as well under the Trump administration. So it's good to have some Montana friends inside some of these outfits.
It sure is, Aaron. We have a number of Montanans right now that are doing incredible work in D.C. within the Trump administration, not the least of which is our friend Chris. You've heard me say many times over the years, Aaron, that I believe all roads lead to Glasgow. Chris's family has good, strong roots in Glasgow, just like yours. He grew up in Billings, went to law school at University of Montana, and was a real support to us through this process of understanding how to navigate the opportunity in front of us with the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. How we got this, Aaron, was back in 2022, Congress passed a piece of legislation called the Unleashing America's Innovators Act that allowed four of these community engagement offices to be opened around the world, trying to put engagement services closer to where the research and the inventions actually happen, focusing on rural, frontier, tribal, and underserved economies in Montana, all of which we know Montana checks that box. So working with Chris and the governor's office, we were able to put together a very strong proposal for Montana to be the first Western United States engagement office for USPTO. Right now, there's only one other office in the whole country, and it's in New Hampshire. So right now, inventors and developers in Montana had to either work through the main office in Alexandria, Virginia, or try to contact the engagement office in New Hampshire, because earlier this year, our regional office in Denver was closed. And so having these services right here in Montana on campus at MSU is going to be a phenomenal value add for Montana.
I would even go back a few years earlier, maybe it's probably around a decade or so ago now, where they started creating this. It's not a top secret facility in the sense that, hey, shh, it's top secret, you can't tell anybody about this. But basically, they created a top secret SCIF to where folks in the business community, people with clearance that do work for our government, maybe they build unique technology to support our troops in the battlefield, right? But they need a top secret platform to be able to communicate back and forth with. They built one of those in Bozeman. Which is so key, because now if you're a Bozeman-based manufacturer or tech firm that's building these, you know, critical tools to assist our troops on the battlefield, Well, instead of having to fly somewhere to have these communications whenever you need to do it, you can do it right then and there. Similar regard, you create some new technology or some new piece of equipment. You're an inventor. You now have this patent and trademark office right there to where you're not having to get on flights flying all over the country to do basic paperwork or face-to-faces to get your technology protected and out there in the market, right?
Absolutely, Aaron. You know, the work at MSU Bozeman's campus in the defense space was one of the really strong arguments we made for placing this office on MSU's campus. But really, there's more that can be added and really support this infrastructure from MSU Bozeman. MSU is an anchor institution. It's a top-tier research university. It's serving as a national leader in optics and bioscience and agriculture technologies. It's producing both patents and talent to work in these industries. You hit on the access to underserved innovators, where, you know, we know Montana's vast rural frontier nature has already given us that strategic opportunity that the Pentagon has recognized Montana and our ability to play in this space. It's why they recently launched the Defense Innovation Unit Outpost at MSU. And that U.S. patent and trademark presence is going to provide critical access to inventors, entrepreneurs, tribal communities, and the veterans who are across the Northern Rockies, who we know face barriers to navigating that patent process. But in addition, just the innovation economy itself in Southwest Montana right now, the major private investment that's been attracted to the region in these sectors, incredible influx of federal research dollars is absolutely catalyzing high wage job growth and technology commercialization in that sector. And then just regional connectivity. Bozeman is not only integral to Montana on the campus at MSU, but its location is really at the heart of the Northern Rockies, which gives us that accessibility to innovators all across this region, whether it's Idaho, Wyoming, and the Dakotas, or beyond. This is a really central location, and for all those reasons, MSU was absolutely elevated as the first location in the country, or in the western part of the country, to receive an outreach office for the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office.
Yeah, I know Governor Gianforte sent a letter to Commerce Secretary Lutnick back in September, and it also had the support of Senator Steve Daines and Tim Sheehy, who also sent supportive letters as well. The Montana Photonics and Quantum Alliance, Montana Chamber of Commerce, Montana Retail Association, and of course, the university system backing this as well. But the governor saying this new USPTO office will play a strategic role in expanding opportunity for all Montanans and providing innovators with the tools to protect their inventions and grow their operations. Sarah Swanson, Commissioner of Montana's Department of Labor and Industry, as you look back on 2025, as you look ahead to 2026, what's the things that stand out to you?
You know, what stands out to me, Aaron, is the incredible opportunity in front of us because of the governor's willingness to boldly sign the 406 jobs executive orders. This one win, it's a huge win, but the Patent and Trademark Engagement Office is just one of many wins already under 406 jobs. When we received that executive order from the governor in August, he challenged us for 90 days to pull together all of Montana's innovators, employers, and community leaders and really put together a one-year plan that was attainable but bold to really move Montana's workforce forward around these six high-impact and high-demand sectors in Montana. In order to do that, we took our team on the road. We left Helena, we left the Department of Labor, and we went on the road and visited 15 cities around Montana in just 5 short weeks. And in doing that, that's really where this opportunity around intellectual property and patent supports was raised to us for the first time. We were really poised with a question of what does development look like in Montana? What does invention look like in Montana? Are we going to focus mostly on technology, research, development, and early stage commercialization? Or are we going to move Montana in the direction of significant manufacturing capacity and having both the resources and the skilled talent to staff and operate those manufacturing plants? And we think that's what this engagement office is going to allow us to do, to build to scale, not only doing world-class research on campus at MSU, but also developing high-paying, high-skilled jobs in communities all across Montana. And that's a real game changer for communities, especially in rural and eastern Montana, where I'm from.
It is so amazing that the types of companies that are doing, you know, or just the inventors here in Montana that are coming up with technology, this quantum technology. I mean, this is literally the future, the space race right now, and it's important to national security and developing hypersonic capabilities. So it's not just about, you know, the economy, but it's also about American national security. And we've literally got folks on the ground here in Montana, and especially in Bozeman, that are the leaders in this new space race, if that's what you want to call it, and hypersonic technology and so much more. Absolutely incredible. Sarah Swanson, Merry Christmas. Enjoy your time on the High Line. Great to catch up with you.
Thanks, Aaron. Merry Christmas.
All right. We got another Glasgow guy. Doug Stebbleton's going to join us for our special Christmas Eve show tomorrow. So if you run into Doug around town, the Hollywood producer and big veterans advocate, tell him we said hi. We'll see him tomorrow.
Fox Sports Update.
Good drive. Second down and four. Purdy throws back across the field and has a touchdown, George Kittle.
One of five touchdown passes thrown by 49ers quarterback Brock Purdy against the Colts last night. Monday Night Football on ABC ESPN. George Kittle left the game in the third quarter with an ankle injury. The 49ers still picked up their fifth win in a row, beat the Colts 48-27 in Indianapolis. San Francisco improved its record to 11-4. And kept hopes alive for the NFC's number one seed.
Brock, the first five touchdown game of your career, I know you weren't feeling great coming into the game because of a cold, but what felt good out on the field tonight?
I mean, everybody just did their job. Feel like Kyle was in his bag with his play calls and the run game, the O-line just doing a great job for Christian, and then obviously the pass game, to be able to dish it out to a bunch of guys and then make plays, like, it was just a team effort across the board.
49ers QB Brock Purdy with ABC ESPN after a 48-27 win over the Colts last night. The loss by Indianapolis created much movement in the AFC playoff picture. Three teams clinched playoff spots as a result of last night's game. The Bills, Jaguars, and Chargers all got in. While Christian McCaffrey caught two touchdowns and ran for 117 yards, George Kittle, Juwan Jennings, and DeMarcus Robinson also caught touchdowns from Purdy, who threw for 295 yards. Colts 44-year-old quarterback Phillip Rivers more than doubled his passing yards from last week's return to the game. Rivers passed for 277 yards with two touchdowns and one interception for Indianapolis, whose record fell to 8-7. 2 weeks left in the NFL regular season. There are two playoff spots still open in both the AFC and the NFC. Week 17 kicks off Thursday. You can download the Fox Sports podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. I'm Jared Max.
Get more on the Fox Sports app and foxsports.com.
Here's a look at your Montana weather for Billings and Bozeman. For today, some patchy fog possible to start. Otherwise, we'll have mostly cloudy skies with high temperatures climbing up into the upper 40s. For tonight, mostly cloudy with lows in the lower 30s for Billings, closer to the middle 30s for Bozeman. And into Wednesday, we'll see a mixture of clouds and sunshine with highs in the low to mid 50s. And that's a look at your Montana weather on Montana Talks. I'm weatherology meteorologist Michael Caro.
President Trump posting to Truth Social in all caps, I love Montana, as he announces his approval of an emergency disaster declaration for the state of Montana following these big storms and flooding that we've had here recently. Aaron Flint here with Montana Talks. I shared that story on our Montana Talks website, and kind of funny to see how some of the liberals are reacting. Oh, he's only helping
Montana.com to start the conversation today. Planning ahead isn't about saying goodbye. It's about caring for those you love most.
Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
I was talking that whole time, and I had my mic turned off. That was, all right, it's Caden's probably back there like, oh, here he goes again. Either he had too much coffee or he didn't have enough coffee. All right, here we go. I was laughing there, even though my microphone was turned off, because Johnny Joey Jones apparently So Johnny Joey Jones, great Marine Corps veteran. He was EOD, one of the bomb explosive experts, but lost both of his legs when an IED went off right underneath him. He's on Fox and Friends a lot, especially on the weekends. Great guy. But apparently he made a joke about the Coast Guard earlier this morning. Because what do military guys do? They make fun of themselves a lot, and they mock other service branches. So if you're a Marine, you're going to mock the Army. If you're the Army, you're going to mock the Navy. Right? It's just standard issue for anybody who's ever served. But some guy got really offended because he made a joke about the Coast Guard earlier this morning on the on Fox and Friends. Apparently, and so now he said, you know, I've heard that Marines eat crayons for 2 decades. I love it. Give us all the crap you want. Inter-service trash talking is a cultural staple. But, Lord, make one joke about the Coast Guard and you'd think I attacked their mama. So I replied with a meme. What'd you say about my mama on X? Anyway, well, let's see. What should we talk about now? Wind power projects. You know, we've been talking a lot about energy this hour of this show. Where was this here? The White House the Trump administration pauses 5 wind projects over national security risks. The Trump administration pausing 5 offshore wind leases on Monday over concerns that they would interfere with military radars. You guys think wind power projects are ugly on the plains of Montana? Think about what folks out there on the beach think about all those wind power projects as well. Here is Interior Secretary Doug Burgum on Fox News explaining why they put a halt to these wind projects.
Well, Jason, great to be with you. The national security concerns, as delivered by recently completed classified reports from the Department of War, focus around radar and radar interference. It's hard to imagine the scale and size of these offshore projects, but we're talking about hundreds and hundreds of towers that are taller than the Washington Monument. The blade spans cover 2.5 football fields. They're moving at 150 to 200 miles an hour. Our onshore radar that we have protecting our large metro areas along the East Coast, our military installations, they're designed to pick up movement. These projects, they create radar clutter, they create radar shadows. This is the thing we want to look at, so that we've, with national security concerns, are pausing these projects until we have an opportunity to see if the mitigation, if there can be mitigation to secure these concerns.
And what happens, Mr. Secretary, with the ones that are already up and operational? This is for new projects, but what about the windmills that are already up and moving?
Well, this is particularly for offshore wind along the East Coast, and this is also, again, these are the 5 major large projects that are all currently under construction. One of them is producing a little bit of power. They're going to be able to continue to produce that power during this period of suspension. But we are effectively, with the work that was done with President Trump's leadership last year, the legislature with the Big Beautiful Bill, there is virtually no offshore wind projects being even contemplated. These things only existed because of the massive tax subsidies. They were unreliable, they are unaffordable, and they were built primarily with foreign-sourced companies and foreign-sourced equipment.
And then you think about it, this green new scam, all this green energy that was forced upon us as Americans, and then we wonder why electricity prices skyrocketed 30% under the last...
When you're high, you feel different. Pretty obvious, right? You think different, talk different, but if you feel different, you drive different. So if you're high, just don't drive. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Let's take a moment to breathe. Deep inhale. Extend your spine. Remain focused on what you're doing. If safe to do so, exhale slowly, leaning to one side. Inhale back to center. If safe to do so, exhale slowly to the opposite side. Find mental health resources at loveyourmindtoday.org. This message is brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ed Council.
KDEA